Session 73, reading from the early sessions, Book 2 of the Seth Material, July 22, 1964. Good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, I'm going to give you some more material concerning our discussion of matter, but first, I would like to make one comment. After 8 o'clock on the night of a session, Rupert should take steps so that he is not concerned over the question of whether or not particular visitors will arrive. I cannot get through to him as well when he is so concerned, nor when he is so concerned can I let him know ahead of time whether or not witnesses will arrive. Rob notes, before the session, Jane had remarked that she wished Seth could or would let her know whether witnesses were coming. If she is able to let Seth so inform her in advance, it would be very convenient, to say the least. Seth, the whole thing should be handled on a subconscious level, so that he seems to automatically prepare himself in advance in response to an inner knowledge as to whether or not witnesses will arrive. That is, I can let him know, but overly conscious preoccupation blocks him from knowing. Rob notes, from my seat at the living room table next to the windows, I happened to look out in time to see the Pipers turn the corner and move down the street toward our house. I pointed toward the windows and Jane caught my meaning. Seth, close friends obviously no longer bother him. It is only strangers or those with whom you are not closely familiar. Now that your guests are indeed arriving, you may let them enter, or I myself will open the door. I suggest that this time you open the door and bid that they be seated. Rob notes, Jane paused by the window, looking down the rather large room to the door. I lay my board aside. As I did, the door opened and the Pipers entered quietly. Neither of them had attended a session before, but Jane had made arrangements that they were to enter without knocking if they arrived after 9 p.m. Jane remained standing mutely by the windows while I showed the guests to seats. I gave them copies of the last few sessions to familiarize them with the material in case they would rather read than listen at first. Jane then resumed, but now her voice was much stronger and somewhat deeper, quite different from the easygoing tone and volume she had used to open the session. Seth, I have never been much of a host. I hope, however, that you have explained your name and the circumstances surrounding it. We will now continue with the discussion that we have begun concerning the nature of matter, and bringing up in particular one point I wish to make clear. As I have told you, form is not a characteristic of matter. I have said, for example, that grass does not grow from seed. You observe that grass often appears where seeds have been sown, and you conclude erroneously that the seeds grow from matter within it, and that grass grows from the seed. The atoms and molecules, energy and matter, appear and disappear instantaneously. Energy constantly is constructed into the guise of matter, but matter is the simultaneous expression of energy under certain conditions. Rob notes, by now Jane's delivery was much more vigorous, her voice quite loud and strong. Now she walked over to a cane chair that was unoccupied. Seth, we will again use this chair, this time to explain our point. The chair is being constantly constructed. Now the chair represents a subdivision in matter, being what you term dead matter, though we know that consciousness is everywhere. The chair is being fully constructed simultaneously and instantaneously. Now take the blade of grass and the seed. Energy and the consciousness within continually constructs itself into completely new constructions. Because of the various speeds I have spoken of, and because you do not perceive the full reality, you do not notice the simultaneous constructions and think them continuous rather than separate and ever new. When energy in its performance brings about a complete change of form, as it does when a seed seems to grow into a blade of grass, what you have here is merely such a complete difference between the gradations which you are able to perceive that finally you are forced to admit that the thing you take to be continuous matter has somehow or other become something entirely different. You know that you cannot perceive with the outer senses the pulsations of energy as they form this chair. Because you cannot perceive these pulsations, the chair appears durable, a part of your time and space, and continuous in time and space. The chair is neither durable nor continuous, and its reality is limited to the recognition which you give it as an object. Before we have our first break, I will now welcome our guests, although I regret that so much of the material will not be clear, since so much of it rests upon previous discussions with which they are not familiar. The woman's entity name is Aiada, A-E-I-A-D-A, and the man's is Norman. I suggest your first break, and again, may I say that I enjoy your rainy evening. I have been preparing your house for you. Please take your break. Rob Notes break at 9:23. Jane was dissociated as usual. Seth has yet to explain what he means by preparing our new house for us. During break, we tried to give the Pipers a brief resume of what the Seth material involves. Jane resumed in the same vigorous and strong-voiced manner at 9:32. Seth, I have not known either of your guests before, but then I do not have to. I am not the nervous one. It is Rupert who constantly and oftentimes bullheadedly blocks what I have to say. Nevertheless, Norman has twice been before a man, and the time immediately preceding this existence, he was a woman. There are two children then, and he is in this life closely acquainted with three individuals who were close to him in the past existence. Rob Notes, can you tell us something about them? I thought this a good question, since we knew nothing of the Piper's personal history. I interrupted Jane's delivery somewhat to ask it, and it will be noted that Seth did not answer it. As the session wore on, I neglected to repeat it. I have the feeling that the question did not really penetrate enough to make itself felt. Seth. He once, and not purposely, broke a man's back in an accident involving horses. There was no deep guilt involved. Nevertheless, in the woman's existence, he passed by a feeling of guilt. This time he mends people's backs, but this is not the only connection. He was an alchemist. He has been, in past existences, concerned with matter that lies beneath matter. If you will excuse a pun, and for this reason the interest has grown. One life was in a country close to what you now call Palestine. I believe approximately 832 AD, and in this life an accident occurred. Germany also, 1732, in what is now Cologne. An alchemist, 1872, a very brief life as a woman, dying at age 33 in childbirth, Sweden. There has been a need for discipline, which is now somewhat being achieved, and past interests which have this time solidified into a more coherent purpose. We will, at another time, go more further into these particular matters. Again, we find that the woman has been twice a male. This has given an open-mindedness that is this time combined with a more feminine intuition. The nearest I can come now is that one life was concerned with the occupation of a boatsman, or rather small craft, skirting near the shores of the Mediterranean. The craft carried merchandise, but not spices, rather, perhaps cotton. There was also a soldier's rather superstitious existence in an involvement during the Crusade period, where, if I may say so, men were driven like fools and sometimes brainless idiots in fine pursuit of an idea of God which they could neither conceive nor construct. Rob Notes. Jane pointed at Rob Piper. By now her voice was quieting down. Seth. He was indeed at that time as superstitious as the rest. In a battle he was killed by a Moor. The looting carried on in the name of the Christian God would indeed make the pagans blush. There is still a tendency here to depend perhaps overmuch on intuitions which are basically sound, but such dependent must go hand in hand with the discipline of which I have spoken. The death occurred in desert. It happened very close to Lepanto. He was then in his late 50s and left two women, not one, also one son and four daughters. There is much more along these lines. I believe he sent a message to one woman by a young man, and the message was not delivered. This will not mean much to his present personality on a conscious level, but the fact that the message was not delivered will mean much to the inner self, for that previous personality had set store by it. I will suggest a short break, and incidentally, I have not forgotten the party of which I have said already too much. I feel that after so many dry and studious sessions, I owe you a night to remember. But I shall keep my dignity, and you may worry about your own. Take your break, by all means. Break at 9:56. Jane was dissociated as usual. She resumed in her quieter voice at 10:06. Seth, there was no communication between the four of you in the past and no linkage of your lives. There has been, however, a telepathic sort of communication between you in the present, and it is no coincidence that you became acquainted. On a subconscious level, you realize that many of your interests were the same. The child of the man and the woman has existed as a personality four times before, which makes him older than his parents, in a manner of speaking. He died as a young child upon one occasion, a girl with musical abilities, during another existence in, I believe, Babylonia. He was what passed for a scribe. He worked on tablets of stone and was given social position because of this ability, though he did not come from well-to-do parents. Rob notes, what is the child's entity name? Seth, his entity name is Waldoon. The musical ability was picked up again in the 16th century in England, where we find him as a minor composer for organ, where he used the scribe's ability as well. There is a mechanical talent, early developed, though strangely in a woman's life, when he was a girl caring for a father's shop. The shop was concerned with the forerunner of balloons, an early invention that never became popular for the distribution of letters in medieval France. I will now, with your kind permission, say a few words in reference to the reality of which I spoke briefly last session. You can come close to understanding this reality if you will once more consider an analogy that we made much earlier. Do you remember our imaginary painting that hung up on the wall? Rob notes, yes. See the 43rd session, page 4. Jane now pointed to a painting I had finished a couple of years ago. It hung over our divan, above the couch. I had used Jane as a model, and in the painting she stood by a river, beneath trees. Across the river could be glimpsed a village. We will take that painting for an example. In our analogy, the painting, while framed within a given space, expanded. It did not spill out into the room, and yet the trees can be imagined to grow taller, the background to add to distance and perspective, the water to flow, and yet there would be no impression made on the back of the painting. Examination of the back of the painting would show nothing. The elements of the painting would expand in the same way that I have told you the universe expands, in a way that has nothing to do with space but of value fulfillment, which has its own kind of depth and perspective, and which exists not only behind but within the construction of matter. The depth of this reality cannot be plunged into in the same manner that one plunges into a river or a stream. The depth of this reality can, again, be compared to the depth of a sleep or a trance, or the depth of any common psychological experience. Rupert, I believe, once wrote a poem in which he stated, much more poetically indeed, that pain was deeper than a lake or a river, and this type of depth is that to which I refer here. There are perspectives of which you know relatively little, and they in turn are frameworks, forming physical constructions. Actually, physical constructions, which you do not perceive. There are multitudinous physical constructions in the space between these two chairs, of which you are not aware, because you cannot perceive the perspective in which they occur. I am going to suggest your break. I would first of all suggest, and only suggest, that the four of you continue an association, as I believe you will all benefit. There are abilities on your visitors' parts which are not being utilized, and which certainly should be. Rob notes, break at 10:28. Jane was dissociated as usual. She resumed in the same manner, somewhat more strong and forceful than usual, at 10:35. Seth, I certainly do appreciate, and indeed do enjoy, your lively discussions. And I do indeed recall Rupert's rather daring, but more nearly stupid, blunderings into his first deep trance. Rob notes, Jane's January 10, 1964 trance is described in Session 14, Volume 1. Seth, I would suggest that your visitors be allowed to borrow a copy of the material, as they are both capable of comprehending and benefiting. The material should be read from the beginning, with the exception of the personal material which has been delivered this evening. There is no doubt that the development of matter and an understanding of it will enable you to manipulate it, and also at times to discard it, almost entirely. Since the individual constructs matter, and indeed constructs his own physical universe, he can improve these constructions, and his expectations are intimately connected with the subconscious mechanism of construction itself. The thyroid gland operates strongly in regard to expectations, hormonal balances being maintained at rather normal levels normally. It is sensitive, however, to panic and fear, and affecting other glands working with inner subconscious mechanisms. It becomes overly stimulated and causes subconscious mechanisms to actually create in matter the object of the fears which have themselves caused the initial overaction. In the same manner, other constructions are affected. It is true that what becomes matter must be dealt with as matter, and yet the inner vitality and the inner self have their own ability to heal. The trouble is, these abilities are little utilized and seldom appreciated. The mind constructs into matter its own idea of reality, and this is where personal expectation comes into play. You do not only create your own environment, generally speaking, you create it concretely, in forms of mass and matter. You knock your head against walls that you yourselves have made. We will go into a long discussion concerning the actual physical and subconscious mechanisms involved in the construction of idea into material reality at a later session. In line with this, please consider the material already given concerning the ways in which atoms and molecules form a simple object such as a chair. I will now close the session somewhat early by a few moments or so, and again I would suggest that your visitors read as much material as possible. They are, of course, welcome to any session, but a familiarity with the material will add to the benefit that can be received by witnessing a live session, and indeed, I can be a lively one. I have been in my time quite reprobate. Rupert does not allow me much leeway at present. I will now bid you all a fond good evening. Your psychological time experiments should go better next week. Rob, how come? It has to do simply with the ebb and flow of your own energies, and we will have a session soon dealing with the experiments which you have listed. Rob, good night, Seth. End at 10:55. Jane was dissociated as usual. My writing hand felt a little fatigue.